Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Rose 12 Stocks on Our Radar for 2026, the half year review show. I guess I'll come to you, Kev, because you're kind of like the gatekeeper on the performance thus far of our kind of, originally, obviously, we had 12 and then we added a kind of wild card each, totaling 15. So just give us a review of the actual total portfolio as we stand now.
Yeah, as we stand now, and this is recorded a few days before it's to go out. But as we stand now, we are basically 75% up per stock. Okay, so we are currently 75% on per stock. We have three stocks that have more than bagged, and we have 8 of the 15 in positive territory, one even, and 6 that are down. Our worst performing one is 41% down. Our top performing one is 744% up.
Okay. So I'll come to you quickly, Charles, before we move on and give a kind of like a let's say, an update on each one of those stocks. How does that perform to other, you know, let's say, you know, maybe markets, I suppose also different asset classes as well. Give us your synopsis on how we're doing.
Obviously, we're doing very, very well compared to the average, which is always nice to see. And I think one of the key things is that our portfolio and what we're doing works via the power law, right? Which is where lots of the stocks aren't going to move particularly much. Some of them will not do well because it's inherently risky, but a number of the stocks are going to multi-bag and it drags up the portfolio average. And the key point is that it's very hard to know which ones are going to be the ones that go boom, because when we're covering them, when we're picking them, when we're talking about them, we're equally optimistic often on their prospects. And so probably the biggest takeaway from this is if you're going to play in this space with your risk capital, when I say risk capital, I mean money that you can afford to lose, but, you know, hoping to massively multiply, it's the portfolio approach. You know, if you listen to a clip of this, you know, on social media, or someone says, oh, look what the Rose guy said about this particular stock, we did say that, but it's within a wider conversation of everything in the portfolio. And I'd say, Kev, Phil, you probably agree. You know, obviously, you want to just pick the one that went up 700%. But that's often not how it works. You have a good chance, if you do that, you'll pick the one that's down 40. Yes. And one of the key things is, you know, some of the stocks that are down 20, 30, 40%, there's no reason why they should be. They just happen to have gone. So fundamentally, often they're in a better position than they were 6 months ago. So the market decides what's popular, and then it rallies on sentiment. But overall, we're doing really, really well.
Very good. Okay. Well, let's start on a review. Let's go with the 12 that we picked originally, Kev. Do you want to start with your first two?
Yep. So the first one, and the one that is up 744%, is Delta Gold Technologies. I have to say, you boys were both naysayers when I picked this in December at 18p, I think it was. But what I would say is that the blue sky on this is absolutely phenomenal. We've got a tech company that is looking at quantum computers, quantum problems in general. And I suppose the key to it is that it's building a IP and patent bank by using the best brains in the world on quantum computing, whether that be Toronto University and Dr. Rudy, is it, I think, or Penn State University, and their slightly different tech view on the nanostate gold. And then I think we're going to add a UK university to that as well in the not too distant future. Again, it's a company worth maybe 90 to 100 million pounds as we speak. In the US, all of these quantum computing companies are worth $1 billion plus. So is there room for it to grow? I think absolutely 100%.
Well, no greater deal than a convert. I think where it changed for me is where they went from one platform at one university to multiple research strands at multiple universities. That's where the investment case came a lot stronger. And yeah, I agree with you. I think it's got further to run.
Yeah, I think it's got a lot further. I think if you think you've missed it, yeah, I don't think you have, is my honest opinion. I think it could easily be 10 times from this. Maybe that takes a few years, but ultimately it could. And the second one I chose in the original 12 was GMET. It's currently up 81%, has been significantly higher than that. It's been, I think, close to 150 to 200% up. We just had the PFS out. We just interviewed Oliver last week. In terms of that, we also spoke with Jonathan Swan about Tempa Ute. I think it's got a long way to run, personally. It's going to be pushed by the Americans for sure. They need that tungsten and they need it badly, and they're going to pay for it, I think. So that would be my very short-term view on GMET. And I think more than likely there's going to be a big brother come along and give them a lot of money and tell them to go away, basically, is what I think will happen. But knowing Oliver, I also think there's going to be some grants before all that happens, and they are going to take it to the point where I think they can get the best bang for their buck.
We shall see. I think kind of underscored this, like when we were speaking to Jonathan, is just how big Tempa Ute is and how it could, potentially be much larger than Pilot Mountain, which itself is already the largest undeveloped tungsten deposit in the US. And, Reuters reported that GMET was targeting $100 million plus just for Pilot Mountain alone in grant funding. If you get that again for Tempa Ute, you can see how quickly the story can keep moving upwards. And I think one of the big things is availability of domestic tungsten is a geopolitics story, and £1 billion for that availability is a price that the US military are quite happy to spend ultimately. So we will see. Right then, am I next? Yeah. Okay. So my first one was Amarok, which is down slightly, I believe, year to date. I'm really not stressed about it. It popped up initially and then came back down. If you want to play Greenland properly, this is the only company in Greenland that has a proper functioning operating mine. They have the services business of Suliaq. They're going to be generating 10,000 ounces of gold per quarter once we get into Q4, and it will just re-rate on the fundamentals. The other aspect I'd like to say, the amount of exploration going on is just huge, huge levels of exploration and results going to come through. You've got Nanoq, which could be a potential tier one mine. You've got Black Angel, which I think is in line for US government funding in the near, not too distant future. The CEO Elder was even talking to Bloomberg, saying that, these conversations are going on with both the US and Europe. You've also got Japan muscling into Greenland as well. And I just think I see it as it's a frontier play. Amarok is cornering that frontier. Give it not particularly much time. And we're either going to see a buyout in the next couple of years, or you're going to see it just re-rate massively on gold production, or both. So we shall see. But this is a long-term play for me. It's done very well if you've been in over the past few years. I see it as rising really, really rapidly. It's coming to the main market. It's backed by a city. Once it comes to the main market, those city clients will start buying in, and away we go. My second one was Bazant Resources. Bazant is done. I remember actually, Kev, you and I were in a room in the City Club in London a couple of years ago with Colin, back when all of his stocks were kind of in the dumps. And Colin was saying all these wonderful things about copper going to sort of $12,000, $13,000, $40,000. And how the demand for it would go crazy, and how he was sitting on these short resources, and most of the room was kind of glazed over. But I gone there with like a report that I'd done up, and just said, look, all of these companies are horrendously undervalued. If you buy now, you're going to do incredibly well. And Bazan, I mean, it was worth, what was it worth a couple of years ago? Just basically
Well,
nothing.
the price was 0.02, wasn't it,
Or what,
basically?
0.18 is what I bought, And what we're sitting at now, point 1.4, and
It's
rising.
nearly 10x on that, isn't it?
Yeah, indeed.
0.15, roughly. Since we picked it, or since you picked it at
Since I
Christmas,
picked it, but
it's done
also,
100%.
but the thing is, so I've done the maths on it, right? If it goes according to plan, and you've got to caveat that when you're building a mine and developing for assets, things always go wrong. There's always hiccups. But I think $80 million of net profit over the first 2 years is very, very feasible. Now, you compare that against the market capitalization of a company and you apply a multiplier to the profit generation, this could easily hit 0.5 and potentially a penny plus in the next 12 months. So I'm still incredibly bullish on Bazan. I haven't sold a share. I'm holding for gold or copper, as it were.
Yeah, and gold and silver.
And gold and silver, sure. Bill.
Okay. I'll jump in. Yeah. So, first one for me was Energy Pathways. I guess they've significantly advanced their flagship mesh energy storage project over the past quarter since we last talked about them, securing this landmark gas storage license from the North Sea Transition
Yeah, so
Authority. What would be,
59% since you
is
picked
it?
it,
Yeah, that's not too, not too
but
bad.
was more than bagged at one point,
Yeah,
you know, so.
absolutely. Obviously, what would become Britain's largest integrated energy storage hub, and that license paves its way, I think it's 60 offshore salt caverns supporting the natural gas, hydrogen, and compressed air energy storage, with the project targeting FID in 2028 and operations by 2031 alongside partners including Siemens, Costain, and Wood. The company also partnered with the Associated British Ports to assess the Port of Barrow as the onshore base for mesh. Launched its license work program with offshore surveys during Q3, and also welcomed Ofgem's plans for a second round of its long duration energy storage cap and floor scheme, positioning its 300 megawatt CAS facility for future government backed support. So I think it looks really good. I think it's been de-risked massively through the, you know, since the obviously this project was advanced, and obviously securing that which was a landmark gas storage license from the NSTA. And I think it's got a long way to run, as you say, Kev. It was up well over 100%. It's probably around the 59% as now, but I still think the market hasn't really woken up to the potential of EPP. Next one is Sovereign Metals. They have had a few updates. I think the biggest milestone since we last talked was they delivered the DFS, not the SOFA, but the definitive feasibility study for the world-class Kasia Rutile graphite project in Malawi. The study confirmed robust economics, including a $2.2 billion pre-tax NPV, an annual EBITDA of $476 million, free cash flow of $452 million, and a 25-year mine life, which obviously positions Kasia as the world's largest producer of natural rutile and flake graphite with industry-leading low operating costs. So really good to see that DFS finally come to fruition. And then there was also further upside emerging after Met Work confirmed significant concentrations of the valuable heavy rare earths as well, including dysprosium, terbium, and yttrium within monazite recovered from the processing circuit, potentially creating a third revenue stream with minimal additional processing as Sovereign evaluates the economic opportunity. So I think that was just a kind of like another string to the bow, wasn't it? Kasia, I don't know what your thoughts are on the whole the rare earths.
Yeah, I Sovereign cards on the table is currently my largest position. It wasn't for a time, and then the share price came down, and you're in for a penny, in for a pound.
Yeah.
It's the largest rutile deposit in the world.
When do
It's
you
a
think the
sec.
market's going to finally do and wake up to it? Because it just feels
I
it's
I'll
being
tell
valued
you.
on nothing at the
I
moment.
already I'll tell you exactly what's going to happen, and it's been choreographed in the RNSs, right? So unless something goes horribly wrong, and caveat things do, right? You've got a DFS backed by the IFC, which is the development arm of the World Bank, that's put nearly $80 billion into mines last year. The IFC or the US government or somewhere along that line is going to come along and sign a massive, great funding deal to build this mine, and the share price will just go vertical. And I think the problem is, from a marketing or a market perspective point of view, is that, okay, the DFS is done. The question is, when is that announced? It's not if that announcement is going to come from me, it's when. Is it going to be next week, next month? Is it going to take 6 months? And because you don't know exactly when it'll be, there's a large amount of capital thinking, well, I can put this money to play elsewhere and jump back in before the announcement comes. But you're playing a game of chicken, right? Well, it's almost like musical chairs, and then the music will stop if you're not sitting down in the chair, and you're going to lose money. So yeah, I'm quite happy to buy down here. I think it's great value.
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't know when it's gonna happen, but I'm with Charles. It's gonna happen. It's just a case of when. I don't know. I think it's months away yet, and that's why the share price is where
It
it is.
could, yeah, it could easily be, and but then I think this is kind of, it's a crazy thing. Like, we were talking about a few other companies offline, Kev and I, just before we jumped on, and we were saying, how limited like the small cap mindset is in terms of time scale. Even if it took 6 months, what does the share price look like 6 months from now, or a year from now even? I don't
Yeah,
think it'll take a year.
you're
Like,
right. The
you're
problem is if you're not in it, you'll miss you'll just turn and you'll miss it. You'll miss
Well,
the off.
it's if you say, right, well, will the market cap double when that announcement comes? Probably. Do you want to double your money in less than a year? Probably. Like, that's a good investment. It just is. But again, it's a lot of this market is just chasing whatever's got the best sentiment tail on at the moment. That's just the reality. But we will see. We will see. I think we'll get the last laugh here. But who knows when? Who knows when?
Okay,
Next.
my next one of the four that we picked at Christmas was Extract Resources. It's up 118%. I'm a bit disappointed it hasn't gone further already, to be honest with you, with the potential for Silver King production. I mean, it already is producing the oxides. The sulfides are going to start coming out of the ground shortly and be processed on site. They only have 35% of it, but even with the 35%, I think it's going to be between $4 and $6 million per annum in terms of free cash flow for Extract Resources. They've also got antimony, which I think in Morocco, Amgas, I think it is. And I just don't think people quite comprehend how big that could be. I think it could be $20 million free cash flow plus per annum come 2027. You add those two figures together, you got a market cap of 12 million pounds, and you could have free cash flow of $25 million a year. People don't believe that's going to be executed, I think, which is another reason why Bazan hasn't gone up as much as it has. But if it is executed, then we're going to be
Yeah,
many multiples of the
I think
price
you bang. I think
today.
you bang on the money there. And what I'm actually enjoying seeing is Colin Bird's recent X post. He's really ramping up the, pictures from, obviously we talked about Bazan a minute ago, pictures from Hope and Gorup. We've seen obviously him in front of the camera on his own X feed being interviewed. And I mean, I reshared it the other day, and I know you made a comment, Charles, but it's really good. He's really so passionate about it, isn't he? He gets a lot of stick online and on the forums, as we talked about before. But it does it feel like he's finally delivering now, do we think?
Oh no, he was always delivering. I
No,
mean,
sorry.
it's
Sorry, let me
no,
rephrase
no.
that. Let me rephrase that. He has delivered. I'm not knocking that. What I mean is there's a lot of people saying, "Oh, come on, Colin, you did it back in 2009 with the sale of Kawara and everything, but it's been you've been dining out on that and every, I'm not saying I know he can
No,
deliver.
but this is the thing, right? You got to get. He's done more drilling than anybody in London for the
Yeah.
past, what, 10 years, right? More meters in the ground, more resource delineation. The market wasn't there. We were in a huge, horrible bear market for a very long time. Now you've got copper at record highs and he's sitting on multiple JORC resources across the stock portfolio. You're talking about extract, right? Like Bushranger. Okay, so say you've got $30,000 per ton, right? That's got 1.3 million tons of copper equivalent in the ground. That's $17 billion of copper. Now, obviously, you can't recover it all, and there's lots and lots and lots of caveats, but you're kind of the market hasn't taken into account the way these things are. And so, when extract is going into production in two assets and then having a third asset it could sell or vend into an ASX, you've got Hope and Gorup going on. You signed the deal with African Pioneer for Shanghai. You've got Kendrick and the rare earth, and obviously Kev's just picked it, and that's gone absolutely shot up. He'd put all the homework in and the share price didn't move, and then it just went boom across the portfolio. And that's exactly what, this is the thing I was talking about, patience. You could have bought, as I did, as we all did, a couple 2 or 3 years ago, shares in these companies for basically nothing.
Yeah. Did you see the old Colin Bird on the front cover of the mining magazine? Yeah, that how good it's like Colin Bird runs $1 billion mining empire. The British businessman controls three listed companies in Namibia. How cool. I mean, it's the market is finally is slowly waking up.
Well, I think he's born
Yeah,
out of control, isn't he?
I'm happy to say that obviously I'm healthily in profit already on Extract. I have a very good position. Average is about 0.8. I bought a lot of 0.55. Then there was the raise at 0.6 with warrants at 1.2. I think there's a lot of people in Extract obviously holding for much higher because they got spiked, if you like, when we had the Bushranger thing. But I think we can, once we get past that mentality, then I think we're going to be flying. Anyway, the last stock which I chose at Christmas, which is the one that's down, is Sylvanus, which is 32% down. I'm disappointed in this one because basically the company was moving towards hopefully a financial point, if you like, in terms of getting the, I think it was the SVN 01, was it, over the line.
There one. Yep.
And it didn't happen. They basically didn't get the buyer that they wanted. And they also decided then, okay, if we're not going to get the buyer or the money, then we'll do it ourselves and we'll wait another year. So I think the people who didn't have any patience, so we come down to the patience again, left the story. And we've basically gone from what, 0.03 to 0.0165 or 7, I think it was, when we were looking at it. So, yeah, I'm disappointed at that one. But, you know, in that first four, I had three that have done exceptionally well and one that is losing as we speak. But actually, in the long run, Sylvanas could be one of the top producers of all of these, to be honest with you, with what they've got lined up, especially in terms of, you know, the addiction and dealing with, you know, people with drinking problem, you know, alcohol abuse, if you like. And I think it's a massive market. And if they hit anything to do with it, it's going to be worth a huge amount of money, like hundreds of millions.
Well, I think, it was funny when we did our review of the stocks, was that sort of a year or so ago, and almost all of the ones we were down on subsequently recovered. And I think with Solvanus, I've done the research into it. It will, assuming phase three trials are successful, and that is an assumption, but phase two were overwhelmingly positive and so much better than the current standard of care. I think the value there is extreme. I'm happily a buyer down here, and if you do have to wait longer, that's fine. But a deal, once I'm certain a deal will eventually get done. And the other thing to bear in mind is that it's not like when these conversations are ongoing, they say, "Oh, we're not doing a deal," and we walk away, and that's it. The WhatsApp groups still exist, the email groups still exist. If parties can come back at any time, and I just think the value proposition there is just so strong. It might be down in paper terms now, but give it a couple of years and you'll be right back up there in profit.
I don't even think it's going to take a couple of years. I think
It could be a lot less.
after the summer and it starts moving again and people start thinking, oh, is this really incredibly good value for probably 12 or 13 million pounds for all the IP and all the different things they've got? It probably is. Anyway, move on to your next two, Charles.
Yeah, sure. So I'll go with so my two were Jubilee and Age of Met, my next two. So Jubilee I'll talk about just quickly. I mean, Jubilee has come down in terms of share price terms. Well, we're currently sitting around 2.5p a share.
Yeah,
So
16% down from when you picked it, yeah.
yeah, but it's a 16 from when I picked it, but also down, I'm more down than that in my actual own portfolio. And I just don't see why. I know this is kind of like something an analyst shouldn't say. But the cash value alone of the sale of South African assets is basically the market cap now. You're getting Roan and Sable. You guys have visited those places for free. You've got, investment coming in from really, really big, important players, for the Molefe region. Maybe somebody just wants to get out at any cost. Maybe there's a fund liquidating. But I think 2.5p a share, that's got to be incredible value. Unless something goes horribly, catastrophically wrong. It's just fundamentally it's incredibly cheap, and there's nothing really more to say than that. Ultimately, the other aspect is there's been a little bit, well, not a little bit. There's been a lot of jam tomorrow, as in you're going to get this copper. It's going to be amazing, and it just hasn't quite happened. But when they do start pumping it out properly at $14,000 copper, the amount of profit you can generate will be crazy. Asia Met is, I would guess, basically flat, Kev.
Yeah, it's completely flat.
Yeah, because ultimately. You're looking at,
RSA, as I
yes,
explained it to
well,
you.
it pops up, it pops down. You have a deal done with Norin, with the Chinese, to buy out their flagship, which is BKM, and a lot of investors suspect they're looking to buy Butong as well. And you're hoping to get out of this with roughly 3 pence a share, and the share price is around 1.5p. So the thesis is exactly the same. The deal will, I'm certain, eventually go through. However long that takes. And you will probably double your money from here. But again, it's a question of patience. And I think it's also a question of cash value, right? Because you could have been in, as I have been, for several months and done something else with that money while you were waiting, but you can't know when that deal is going to go through, the RNS comes. So being out of it is a risk of it in and of itself. But yeah, I mean, across them all, fine. But it is interesting to see, because Asia Met, I thought the deal would have been done by now, and it's not. I'm certain it will go through. And Jubilee, I thought, would recover from where it was, and it's just gone down a bit further. So you can't win them all.
Okay, Phil.
Okay, yeah, moving into my final two. So Ajax Resources, obviously a relative newcomer to the market, obviously on Aquas. They have continued to expand the international critical minerals portfolio over the past quarter since we last did a review. I think it was Pehuantá, wasn't it? Silver, zinc, lead project in Chile. They extended the exclusivity on that asset, a former producing mine with an existing JORC resource and significant copper exploration upside. The company also signed an option agreement to acquire Minerva Metals in Sardinia, targeting strategically important antimony, tungsten, and gold assets. And also, obviously, the one that we talked about last weekend, the investment to of £200,000 into Revel Resources, which is obviously advancing its historic uranium projects in Italy ahead of this Aquas listing, which happened this week, I believe. They also have the Macacha copper silver project in Argentina, and Ajax expects environmental approval imminently and has launched preparation for a 5,000-meter drilling campaign and applied to expand its land holding by a further 5,000 hectares, underlining the strategy of building a diversified portfolio of advanced stage critical minerals assets. So I do like Ajax. I think it still has legs. I don't know, was it roughly flat, Kev? Maybe a little bit down on the
about 10% down. I
Okay,
mean,
so
there's a lot of catalysts there. You've got Revel, you've got Eureka sale, which is looking very likely. And I think the encouraging thing about Ajax is its connection with Appian. I think they're going to become almost like a feeder small company. Appian now a shareholder. They've got that gold project, and they've brought on the technical guy, Doctor. Don't ask me what his name is. Who's basically going to be looking after that project? And they're going for initially 300,000, 350,000 ounces of gold, but they expected it to be 1 million ounces of gold. Well, 1 million ounces of gold is worth quite a lot of money in today's market under any situation. So if they actually find that, that would be phenomenal and a real game changer.
And then final one is Encantera. Real disappointment for me, this one. And obviously, there was quite big news out, I believe, in June, maybe end of May, where the company obviously have reshaped their complete commercial strategy by acquiring a Swiss premium skincare company a brand called Eniel, creating a complementary portfolio alongside their existing skin cell range. I think the share deal adds a clinically validated skincare platform, enabling a new protect by day, repair by night product strategy, while opening opportunities for direct consumer sales. Now, obviously, we saw the results before that, didn't we? I think it was maybe in April that they gave an update to market that they'd only sold a hand, literally, I'm not going to say a handful, but a very small number of products to market with their direct to consumer approach through the website. And it was very, very disappointing. So obviously, the new CEO, Stuart Robertson, had provided this £250,000 convertible loan note facility with an initial, I think, 100,000 drawdown for working capital as Simon Ward, Dr. Simon Ward, who we actually never spoke to. I think we spoke to him, but we never interviewed him. But he stepped back from as chief executive role. So realigning the board there, and the company believes the acquisition and management changes will position Encantera to accelerate commercial revenues and establish a stronger presence in the premium skincare market. So yeah, disappointing on that one. I think we're down, what, Kev? I don't know, 40, 50%.
41%. It
Okay.
was much worse, and then after that announcement, it's popped up because
What are the chances on this one, Kev? I mean,
he did it at 2p. Yeah, we had a change of directors in terms of the chairman as well. Tim McCarthy stepped down, and I presume to focus on MU Pharma as opposed to this one. I think this guy's very well connected that's taken it on, and he's actually, I presume, he's part of the company that they are also joining with. My thesis on this one has always been that the IP is worth more than the value of the company at the minute, and the value of the company at the minute is about £2.5 million. I think if they went out and auctioned the IP, I can't see that they wouldn't get £5 to £10 million pounds for it. I
Yeah.
can't see how they
I
wouldn't,
think
because
the
it
big problem,
works.
the big thing we talked about, wasn't it last time, was that it feels like they never found the market. They never aim the product at the right. They may, when you look at their socials, which is a big thing, like you see on TikTok shop products selling out because of they've got the right people behind the brand. They didn't know who they were selling to. And I think if you've got a product, you've got to know who your targeted sales are at, right? And if you get that
Well,
wrong, it's catastrophic.
I date my key issue with it was they had a deal to put it in Marienord. They put
Yeah.
it in the stores, and then that deal fell through.
Yes.
And ultimately, you need to have the product on the shop shelves, right? And that's why, they sold 177 units. They were talking, 100,000. I will say though, the idea of those 100,000 units they want to sell, they still exist physically. So there is a chance that it does get sold and this picks up again. So you can't write it off completely. But ultimately, it's not about profit. It's about breaking even, getting stuff on shelves and getting people trying it first. And if it's not in Boots, right, for example, here, or it's not in John Lewis, or it's not in Debenhams, things like this, new products that look interesting and do something new, they're not stuff you go out and seek generally. They're impulse buys that you see on near a till.
Yeah,
And
and I'm not sure you pay £175 for it either. You know,
Okay.
I think both pricing and target market wasn't right. Anyway, right, let's go on to our fifth and final one, and we will also reveal the stock that we're choosing for the rest of 2026. My fifth stock was EGT, European Green Transition. I mean, I picked this shortly after it had listed, or relisted, I should say, after it raised money at 6p. It's up 39%. Do you know, this is just one. I'm sorry for saying it, but it's, for me, it's a very boring stock that's going to make you lots of money.
Yeah.
Now, if that's what you want, then go for it. I hold it, I've got some of it, and I think great. But I just see it's going to steadily increase in value over the next period of time as more and more contracts are signed. The wind farms require the work that they do, and whether that be the replacement or just the fundamental servicing of the wind farms. Yeah, it's going to make money, isn't
It's a really it's I was saying
it's a
to
no-brainer. It's going to make money.
I was saying one of the larger investors the other day. We were having a chat on the phone, and he was saying, why is it not continuing to rise? And I was like, well, the thing is, it is going to, but you're making revenue, and AIM doesn't like revenue. AIM wants story and narrative, but revenue will just send it. It'll just slowly go up because ultimately we're waiting for those repowering contract numbers, right? And when they come out. If you've signed lots more contracts, it will just re-rate to that value and it will just stick to that value forever. So we'll see.
I expect that to be significantly higher by the end of this year,
Yes, I agree.
unless something drastically goes wrong. Okay, so that was my five. Four of them healthily up, one of them down. The one that I'm choosing, which we could argue I wish I'd chosen it in January, but that would have been I would have been reading somebody's mind, I think, is Kendrick Resources. You know, we're looking at a rare earth project in Namibia. I'm going to struggle to pronounce these ones, so we call it TK Tufelaskupee, is it? Tufelaskupee,
Teufelsscooper.
Tufelscooper. You know, you got grades 3.12%. It's got the right elements in there with the ND and the PR oxides, which is 25% of what they've got, so that's like roughly 1%. There have been grades of 8%, 14.8%. When Charles wrote about it, he compared it also to Mountain Pass in California. Similar grades, £12 billion valuation over there. We looked at just TK having an NPV of 400 million, and that was just the above ground TK resource alone. I'm expecting a maiden JORC Q3 2026. That's what Colin has said. You know, they had a fundraise there at 7p. It's below 7p now. It's at 6.2 or 6.3p. US managed fund, US family office has invested, £1 million plus. And I suppose the thing that really has opened my eyes in the last month, and even speaking to Colin as well, he sees that, I can't pronounce this one either, Kishohui, is it?
Kiza Jose.
Giza Jose.
I reckon Phil has no idea what he's saying
I'm
on
going
there.
off of memory when they've said him. Kaiser
Yeah.
Jose,
Giza Jose.
Kaiser Jose.
Kaiser Jose. It's Kaiser because it's German, isn't it? Kaiser. Kaiser Jose, though overall grade may be slightly lower, it looks like the NDPR is slightly higher. And the other issue is it's over a much larger area. So, the word district has come into the conversations when I've been having them. There's three rigs going. They're drilling like nobody's business. I think we're going to get more and more and more and more knowledge of this. The two things that I think are going to be important are the metallurgy of the thing, as in, do we have a load of uranium in there? Is it going to be difficult to process? Can we process it? If we can, that's going to be a big tick in the box, and hopefully, the share price is going to go up significantly. And I suppose the JORC is the second one, as in we definitely have this much. It's above ground, and everyone's going to start looking at it then. Now, if you've got literally deals like Mountain Pass worth $12 billion, and we've got little old Kendrick worth 25, 26 million, it's got to go up in value.
Well, I'll tell you, with rare earths, I don't think anyone's arguing about, well, probably people are, but I don't have a question mark over the size of these things. It's about processability, right? Which is what they're doing currently. So if you want to see the next move up, you need strong evidence that all of this stuff can be processed economically. And I think, there's no argument there. That's literally how rare earths work. And I think that's what a lot of people looking at the sidelines who are, thinking, is it time to get in or not? They need that validation first. Would you say that's fair, Kev?
Yeah, no, I do. But it's one of the reasons why I picked it as well, because I know that news is coming. I think I'm pretty optimistic that, I think when I've spoken with Colin Bird and Martin Churchhouse, they're pretty sure they've hit the jackpot. They're pretty sure that they've got, a lottery ticket, if you like, in terms of a rare earth project. And I don't see anything other than the US, almost certainly the US, but could be Europe as well. Come in and basically say, yeah, thank you very much. We want part of that. We're going to help you do it. And we're also going to put some sort of processing facility close to the port or close to the mine that it can be processed, put on a ship, and sent on its way.
Good. Yeah. Okay. So my fifth one was Great Western Mining, which is I don't care, up 100%, maybe, hopefully.
Great Western Mining currently up 73%, but was
Oh,
much higher than that. Again,
never heard of him. Never heard of him.
Oh, okay. Well,
Great Western Mining right next to G-Men.
well, it is. And you know what? Obviously, you've got that sort of comparator, that kind of neurology play. But in and of itself, they're drilling. You're looking for assays coming out this quarter and then a maiden mineral resource in Q4 2026. Now, if you get to a situation where Pilot Mountain does get that $100 million plus of grant funding, as Reuters reported, and the assays come back strong and it's in the same mineralization style as Pilot Mountain, and then the MRE is reasonable as well, you're just going to see a read across. You just are. It's inevitable. And I think obviously it is much earlier stage than GMET. They are really kind of just getting started on the tungsten. But all of the initial indications are really strong. And the CEO, Ed Loy, who I've interviewed recently, I think he's a really, really good CEO. I think he knows exactly what he's doing. And I just, for me, I think if you believe, as I do, that GMET is going to hit a £1 billion market cap, are you going to put some risk capital into the play very close by that has some analogs to Pilot Mountain? The answer is yes. And obviously a lot of the rest of the market thinks so as well. So we shall see. It all hinges on the assays when they come later this quarter. But I think it'll be positive, and I think we're going to go on a good run. My
What's that?
last
What's the market cap at the minute, Charles?
GWMO? Well, it's up more, but not particularly much. I think the market cap must be something like 13, £14 million.
Okay.
So
Yeah, it was 24, 25 at one point, I
Well,
think, because
we got up above, it went above 5p and then it came back down. They've had a lot of warrants exercised. But again, they're funded to do all of this. They're funded into H1 next year, and the warrants have pushed up the funding as well more. So you don't need to stress out either about any kind of dilution, which, so we will see. But I think it's a big one to watch. And then my last one that I'm going to add will be Revail, which is IPO, When this comes out, the IPO will have happened. So we will see if I eat my hat or not. But there's a few aspects here. The first is obviously there's very few London uranium plays, and the demand I know to invest in uranium in London is super high. I did an interview with a uranium-based stock in the Athabasca for my American audience, and British investors wanted to buy it, and it's not CREST registered, so they just couldn't. But people want to invest in uranium pure plays, and other than Arkle, there's not very much out there, right? But you have, you've got somewhere in the region of 250 to 300 million euros of capital in terms of development into that asset that they have in Lombardy in northern Italy. And the key thing for me is not just the uranium play, but it's the shareholder structure. So when this comes to market, the vast majority of shares are going to be locked up in insider hands, and is a very, very small free float. And this is how GMET shot up, right? It's because the free float, the effective free float was very small and people didn't sell. And I see that happening here. So cross fingers, we will see, but I think there's a lot of value in this IPO. They raised 2 million. They're coming to market at a 4 million valuation. It's done very sensibly, it's very tight, and I think we'll see a very big jump very quickly. Thoughts, Kev?
Yeah, I can't disagree with anything you said. I think, I mean, the way it's been set up, the structure of the way it's been set up, it should do very well.
Okie dokie.
It's Delta Gold type scenario in terms of the company's got a large proportion of it, both Zenith and Ajax. It's also going to be a good read across, I think, for both of those companies, especially Ajax. Ajax holding 15% of it, Zenith holding 25% of it. So I think it's going to put some impetus behind Ajax as well, which is going to be a good thing. And as we did on the chart show there on Mums, as you said, Ajax had a very, very interesting chart, as in it was looking like it was gonna start to move. And as it started to move, the initial target is 10p. So yeah, let's see where that all goes.
Okay, I'll go on to my additional choice then. The one I added was Ethereum. They've transformed in 2026, really, by securing this 1 million euro non-dilutive exploration funding through the Lithosquare company, this AI-driven joint venture, which obviously allows them to target multiple drilling campaigns across Morocco and Botswana without this dilution. Obviously, the partnership has actually already gone from the agreement to execution with field programs underway. There was a big RNS that went through all of their kind of targets in the different countries, which was really good to see. And obviously, they've got the drilling planned at Agdez in Morocco and also within the Kalahari Copper Belt in Botswana as well. So, a lot of exploration catalysts that we're going to see resulting in RNSs coming our way, I'd imagine. And obviously, alongside that, as Kevin and I have, we've actually been down to see their trading operations in Rwanda there, in their comptoir. They're building that as a second pillar to the business, signing a long-term supply volumes for tin, tantalum, and tungsten concentrates to increase the trading volumes and obviously diversify revenues. And obviously, as we said before, maybe cover some of their working capital there. They've also got the exposure to copper, silver, and critical minerals, near-term drilling as well. And then, as I said, the AI-enhanced exploration. So I think it's down about 7% from memory on the list when we reviewed them. I think that Ethereum still offers multiple routes to value creation over the coming year. So I think it's got room to move.
Charles Bray sent me some pictures there of the new courtois or comptoir or whatever it is that you call it, because they're basically building a much bigger structure now, in a different place from when we visited it. So, and that's basically because of the build-up. So they've signed an agreement with Wogen, which is a very, very reputable trading organization. I think they're part of this American critical mineral get as much as you can situation. And I think the trading itself is going to value this company over the next few years. And then there could be some bonanzas from, HCK that we went to visit, if you remember, Phil, was, they were drilling for the lithium, but actually I think they've realized now that they can basically just dig up the tantalum and use that as part of the processing situation for the trading, which will be bananas in terms of the markup that they'll be able to get because it's their own stuff. Yeah, anything else to add, Charles?
I think the only thing I would say, in terms of catalyst, talking about the trading, obviously a huge uplift from that. But Q4 2025, it generated $145,000 in gross profit. And then Q1, $306,000. So more than doubled, right? That Q1 result came out on the 7th of April, right? So a week after the quarter had ended. And if you'll notice, we are on the 6th of July, which is very almost a week after Q2 has ended. So the trading volume RNS in terms of how much better the trading has been, all stability is going to come out in the next few days. And if the growth has been as exponential or much stronger, you're going to see a huge, huge either, well, one or two things happen. Either the share price is going to go ballistic or it doesn't, and the opportunity to buy there is going to be really, really strong. But we will see. That
So
RNS must be
yeah,
coming very soon.
even if that figure is the same, you're then talking about 1.2 million a year coming into that business. That is phenomenal. Now, actually, I think it will be higher, but who knows?
Okay, another way of putting it, what's the market cap right now?
The market cap right now, I think there's 17 million shares in issue, and it's 27p. So work that out. What's that?
5 million.
5 million.
Yeah.
So if a
Less than
million,
five, less than 5 million, I think
well,
it is, but yeah.
let's say a shell is worth a million, so you're paying 4 million enterprise value. Put aside everything else and just the trading, you're covering that within 4 years of profit, right? And
Yeah.
potentially more. So we'll see. But yeah, I think in for a win.
Okay. So that's good. I'm going to add Astrid Intelligence as my next one. Obviously, we've had Siam on and Mark on before. I'm not going to say I totally understand it because it is. I know Charles has been through it before, but I think in simple terms, the company operates the AI infrastructure by running validators on the Bitensor network, which obviously helps assess and reward AI models. And in return, it earns TAU and subnet tokens. And it also invests in AI subnets that focus on specific commercial applications such as real estate, trading, or data, and also develops its own AI products, including Astrid Arena, an AI-powered competitive trading platform, provides network-level services that support decentralized AI application and ecosystem. So I think, I know for a fact that Mark and Siam invested, significant sum of money into this company when the share price, dropped back a bit. They saw it as a great opportunity to put the money where the mouse it and they've both invested, as I say, what I would class as significant sums of money. And I think it's something different. We've talked about the whole Bitcoin 21 million. There's a certain amount of there's a same amount of TAU that are going to be in circulation. And I think that there's an upside in the company from these levels.
Good, good. Yeah, agreed. Well, I think anything TAU related, I think TAU is the future of cryptocurrency. And obviously some subnets won't work out and some will. If you have a validated business model, you're going to do very, very well. But we will see. Okie dokie.
Yes, Subnet 127, and what Siam's been working on with the trading stuff, I think is where the money's going to be made for Astrid in the short term anyway. If he gets level four off the ground, which he's trying to do at the minute, then they're going to actually be playing with real money, the investment bots on the arena, and they're going to get a cut of all of the fees that the bots use to trade. So the potential there is phenomenal, actually. If it really works in the way that he's discussed, it could be revenue producing pretty quickly, and also obviously produce more and more units in terms of the 127 units, which then transfer into TAU. So yeah, I'm excited about it, actually. We're just basically plagued by big shareholders that were there in the past that we've got to get rid of, basically.
Okay. Anything else to add?
No, by the time you've listened to this, I think England are about to play against Norway.
Yeah. Can you
Or have
believe
they
that? Not
already
can you?
played
No, they'll have already played
Saturday?
Saturday night. This is going out. So
Okay, so
basically, we'll know the result.
we'll know the result by now.
But I bet
It'll
you
be
would have put your
either
money on that we'd have been
England or
playing
Norway.
Brazil. You would have thought we would have been playing Brazil, wouldn't you? Can't believe it.
You know what? I've been living with about 15 or 20 Norwegians for the last 2 or 3 months, and I would say to you no, because I've watched every Norwegian game, and Norway have been fantastic.
Yeah.
And even before the tournament, because most of them were giving me chapter and verse of how well they played, they beat it's Italy home and away in the
Yeah.
qualifiers. So they've gone on, is it 32 or 33 match unbeaten run? Norway have been playing out of their skin, so it's not a given for England
Yeah.
by any
No,
stretch, but
not
let's
at
see.
all.
I'm hoping they're going to do it in Miami. Let's see what happens.
So yeah, I mean, there's been some shock results as we've seen, also some incredible results. I'm gonna go. Well, I'll ask you guys, who do you think's gonna win the World Cup first? With you, Charles.
Yeah, obviously, this could already be wrong when you hear this, but I reckon England's in with a shot. I really
Yeah.
do. Watch that match, and they don't have the best players individually. Some obviously the players are world class, but the teamwork is just up there so well. And I just, if not this year, then when? I think it's the best chance we've had in years, years and years and years. So I'm gonna go with England, and
Yeah,
let's see.
I hope you're right, Charles, but I cannot see anybody beating France. So France is my winner of the World Cup.
Yeah. I'm going to go with my heart says I want England, obviously, like Charles. I think this is our best shot at it. You know, I love what Southgate has built over the years. I think we've had some incredible performances. Certainly, obviously, the Croatia game and the Mexico game are the standout moments. The other two were just a bit meh. But my head is saying like UK France just because Mbappe. But then they've got to beat Morocco on the way there. So, I don't know. I'll say France.
It's not Southgate. It's too cool now. We've got a
No,
German in charge.
what I'm saying is what Southgate has built in that team, the legacy with
Yeah.
Bellingham and Kane is incredible.
Yeah.
So this is really just an update to this podcast because we recorded it, I think it was Monday or Tuesday of last week, and there was some news for a few of the companies. So I'll just quickly go through those. Sovereign Metals, probably the biggest news of any of them. Rio Tinto decided not to take up the option to bid for it. So they're out. Could this be a positive? I mean, we talked about it anyway, I think. I think it's going to be a major positive. The US strategy now is in place. Sapan has spent a lot of time stateside, also spent a lot of time speaking to the Americans when he was in Indaba, when I was trying to get a hold of him when we were in Cape Town in January. So I think this has been on the cards for quite a while. You know, from the US perspective, you've got rutile, graphite, and heavy rare earths all in one place with no Chinese influence. Got to be a game changer for the US in terms of their security of assets. So I think there'll be a few weak hands chucking out, which is what has happened this week. And then I think as action moves forward, we should see a real positive return, but we will see. The other really good news was with Extract Resources. Silver King processing has begun of the oxide sulfides, mainly the sulfides has begun. There's revenue around the corner. High grade areas also being targeted. As I think I said, should be $4 to $5 million per annum annualized of free cash flow coming to Extract from that. Market didn't react. Shock horror. It seems to be the market's asleep at the minute. But ultimately, Extract should be much higher. Simple as that. Okay, and the other one who had news during the week was Aterian. More good news on the trading desk as they look to ramp things up. £295,000, or sorry, dollars of trading profit. That was slightly below what they did last quarter, but I think that was more based around the fact that they are actually ramping it up, and there was also some issues with the price of a few of the assets that they've been traded, that there was a bit of a lull in the price. But I've seen pictures now of the new Courtois, and yeah, it should. I think it's going to go from strength to strength. The best way for me to explain it, I think, is at $295,000 of profit for the quarter. I fully expect that the full year profit's going to be over $1 million. Probably closer to £1 million. That's got to be worth 8 to 12 times that, which is 8 to 12 million pounds or dollars, whichever one you want to use. Plus, they've got the assets in HCK1 and the 8 licenses with Lithosquare valuing the 15%, 1.5 million spend. So that's another 12 million with a lot of upside depending on the drill. You know, the scenario is even those things together would value conservatively, super conservatively, 25 to 30 million pounds, I think. Okay. And we're currently less than 5 million pounds. You know, we're 4.3 million pounds, I think, as a market cap. So again, crazy valuation in terms of that. And there's one other company that I want to speak about, which actually isn't on our list, but that is Fulcrum Metals, FMET. You know, they had an absolutely amazing strategic investment and deal with Chancery Royalty, 20 million royalty financing potentially, and a £200,000 strategic investment with Chancery Royalty. I think it was at 8.5p. I mean, that values their stuff at that's for 5% royalty, I think it was. That effectively means that Chancery Royalty think that, you know, the whole thing is worth well in excess of $400 million. So, and I mean, it is only a promise at the minute rather than actually physically, you know, because it's non-binding. That said, you know, the valuation of Fulcrum is now bananas in terms of the market. And we could point to many, many other companies, I think, that are in that situation. But this is one that I think gold, obviously, it's in Canada, a good jurisdiction. They have a big moat, you know. These guys have got deals with the people who are processing or using a special way to process. And therefore, you know, I think it can only get bigger and bigger and bigger. So I'm very excited about that one. So I just wanted to mention that one as well. Okay, and just to recap, moving on to the things we all already talked about. Hopefully everybody had a joyous time. If you're an England supporter, if you're a Scotland or Wales or Ireland supporter, then please close your ears. But England beat Norway after extra time. A bit of controversy as usual. And they're going to play Argentina, who beat Switzerland. So England, Argentina, I think it's on Wednesday. So come on, England. Should be interesting. Semi-finals of the World Cup. Did we think we were going to get here? Not so sure, to be honest, but we're here. And then the non-event of the night was Conor McGregor going in, trying to super-duper kick in his first seconds and busted his knee. So the fight lasted about 45 seconds, so sorry for anybody who paid for it if it was pay-per-view. And then Paddy the Baddy did the business. So Paddy the Baddy choked your man out inside 45 seconds, I think. So that was a major result. Anyway, we as we said previously, we're going on a bit of a break now. So we'll be back at the beginning of August. If there's any big news, for sure we're going to cover it in midweek takeaways. But otherwise, have a good summer. Let's hope some volume comes back into the market, but it's not looking very likely as it stands for the months of July and August. It's been an awful lot of IPOs and pre-IPOs. I think we alluded to that fact, and that sucked a lot of money from the normal stocks that are already listed, and SpaceX didn't help either, I think, in that situation. So yeah, once that liquidity starts to drip back in, then I think we're gonna have a fun time, I think. Okay, again, hit that subscribe button and follow us if you can, and have a great summer, everybody.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.